Welcome to a special episode of Inside the Sports Car Paddock. This one featuring our dear friend Graham Goodwin, my co-host for the Week in Sports Cars, presented by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. This is Graham at last weekend's season finale for the Asian Le Mans Series. Graham caught up with Richard Dean, team principal for United Auto Sports, who had a wonderful, wonderful result in Sepang in Malaysia. Also spoke with second on the list. We have Cyril Teshwalan, who is the primary director of the Asian Le Mans Series. After Cyril, we have our dear pals Guy Cosmo and Patrick Byrne, who were going for a championship last weekend as well. Then we're joined, second week in a row, which is a great thing, Catherine Legg, who spoke with Graham about the LMP3 opportunity that she had for the Asian Le Mans Series season finale. And we close with Anders Fjordbach, who was first to confirm an entry for next season, this being a two-car Dallara LMP2 effort with the high-class racing outfit. So good on Graham, who captured all of these, did his best to find quiet places. As you'll hear, some interviews are done in a garage and there's a bit of work going on in the background. Others might be in a large room, but nonetheless, recording these in the field in ambient conditions, obviously not as perfect as being in a sound studio, but good on Graham for grabbing a bunch of great folks to bring us inside the growing, the certainly rising Asian Le Mans Series. Graham has about an hour of recordings for us, so let's get going on our first ever Asian Le Mans Series special of Inside the Sports Car Paddock, beginning with our friend, the awesome Richard Dean, presented to you by the Justice Brothers and Cooper Tires.
It's another really busy weekend for the team. The four cars you've got here, I think we're just discussing, makes 11 across three ACO Run Championships, plus the two cars you've run in last calendar year across at IMSA, with one of the cars going most of the way through the season. Huge effort. I guess the question is, and it's not a leading question, why are you here with four cars?
Two reasons. We're a race team. The people that are here run a race team, and we've got to go racing. We've got a big commitment to quality people, quality staff that are on full-time wages, and we've got a nice new facility that we're moving into, and our overheads are big. We need to be busy. We can't have a down season. We can't have an off season. We can't finish at Portimao in October and start again at the prologue. Previous seasons where you and I bumped into each other, where we've been running GT cars in Macau or the Abu Dhabi Gulf 12 hours or Dubai 24 or Bathurst, that's previously kept us busy. And it just so happens in sports cars, the Asian Le Mans Series, which for me has become a European winter series, allows us to keep busy. And then there's the obvious Le Mans entries that gives you your second reason to come, and if you've got any doubt, that's pushes you over the into making a decision.
I guess that presents an immediate question, which is, if you had the success you've had in previous years in Europe, would you be here?
I think so, because if you look, we did have the success the year before and the year before that, and we were still busy in the winter. It wasn't the Asian Le Mans Series, but as you just pointed out, we were in Daytona in January and Sebring in March, and the Sebring test and the Raw, and that kept us busy over the winter. That was last year, and we did the Gulf 12 hours in December with LMP3 cars, so we were looking for a program. And the regulation changes in IMSA that happened recently, that meant an LMP2 car couldn't challenge for the overall win, took that option off the table for us. So Asian Le Mans was the best option.
And we come crashing into 2019 now, that, you know, I'm sure you're there with everything crossed for what happens next week on March the 1st. You know, you're up potentially, if things fall your way, for three titles here. We know that the final 14 entries for Le Mans will be announced on March the 1st. I'm presuming you're looking for two and no more for next week.
Yeah, you know, you're right. You can't get away from the fact it's a nerve-wracking time. You know, having done Le Mans now 2 years running, it's not something that we want to pull back from, and finishing on the podium last year with Montoya, and you know, it makes you want to go back and try and, as ever, we're all addicted to it now, and we're going back to try and get that win, and we'll probably keep going back until we do get the win, and then you can try and win it again. But so Le Mans massively important. It's important from an ambition point of view of why we all go racing, but from a business point of view as well, it's important. So, you know, being here in Asia and having an opportunity to try and cement one of those entries or both of those entries, it's very crucial.
And unusually, not uniquely now with the change in WEC, a quick word about WEC in just a moment, we've already got the calendar, of course, for next season. Starts in late 2019. It's a different looking calendar with one omission. We're not going to Japan. We are going to South Australia in January. And then it's quite a compressed season in the new year. Where does that put it in terms of the reckoning that you're thinking about now moving forward for your programmes 2019 to 2020?
It's a really interesting question. One I've been asked this weekend by, you know, Cyril, who I think has done a great job. They've got a great series here, nice venues, and I saw an article you'd written, Graham, recently that said it's probably this race here in Sepang, the finale, is probably the most important race in the series history with the Le Mans entries, and that's good for the series that it, you know, it's not just another race series, it's got huge importance. But next season, 1920 for us, it will be slightly different because we'll be in the middle of our first ever WEC season. So it probably means our LMP2 team won't come to Asia with the new 2017 cars, because we'll be busy and our kit and equipment and every piece of spares and whatever will be not wanting to split across two programmes. We want to focus on WEC and making sure we give a good account of ourselves. LMP3, I think, is difficult. It's for no fault of their own in Asia. They're going to land right between the old car and the new car arriving in Europe. So for a team like ourselves to come here next year in Asia with an LMP3 car, it means we have to keep a couple of LMP3 cars in the current spec. Well, we're not in that enviable position, financial position. If we buy new LMP3 cars, we'll have to fund it by selling our old ones. If we can't do that, we'll upgrade our old cars. And it'd be hugely important to test early with these new cars because they will be very new, which means we can't afford to carry a couple of old cars and bring them out to Asia and lose them.
So it's full season 1920 with the old cars.
The old LMP3 spec is at the moment. We expect the new cars will be starting to be delivered in late 2019. Which will miss the frame out here, hence why they haven't allowed the new cars into the regulations.
Is there a workable solution to them for that? Because we've got a number of the larger LMP3 spots. I mean, you know, by some distance, I think it's fair to say that in terms of the level of commitment you guys have shown, you're the biggest team here. But there are other teams here with multiple car entries, and they've got multiple commitments as well in Europe next year, and Europol is an emerging force there. Pais Barthez with P2, previously P3 and now GT3 programmes. What could happen that might make that simpler for those teams?
One solution would be that the new 2020 LMP3 car comes out early enough,
yep,
for them to allow it into the regulations here. So if those cars were allowed and we all got them early enough, then we could ship them and use them. And actually, that would be a plus point because it would sell the series to our drivers, because you've got a fantastic winter test program out here in great weather at some good venues. So I think actually, if the cars came out early enough, you'd actually have the opposite effect, where we'd probably have more cars on the grid than we've got this year, possibly. But, I'm not convinced that can happen. You have to work backwards in lead times of production, and I don't believe that the regulations or the cars, the Norma, the Ligia, the Ginetta, have actually been signed off, homologated technically,
And it's a ticking clock.
yeah, an engine, we all know, is a new engine, so delivery of those engines, those are all questions that, you know, I don't know the answer to of whether that can be brought forward.
Because of the logistics, even if there was a change that said current cars for Shanghai, the problem is that the gap isn't long enough, the logistics are too severe, and you're over the holiday break in Europe to switch those cars between the races in 2020.
Well, and you know, you come back to the topic that everybody complains about and moans about of, you know, why we're not going racing, because it costs too much. So if you start flying cars out there mid-season for a four-race program, you've just added, plus spares, you know, just added a considerable amount to your Asia Le Mans Series budget. So I don't think that's an option to start with the old car and finish with the new. But there has to be a solution somewhere, and you know, perhaps. But I don't believe there are enough LMP3 cars out in Asia currently with teams willing and keen and got the desire to come here and use those cars. So I'm only giving it from my perspective. You know, United Autosports will not be in a position to keep old cars right through to the end of the Asia Le Mans Series in 2020 and ship them back and get them back into Europe in April, because then you can't update them and you can't sell them.
It's an interesting question, isn't it? You know, we'll be speaking for this podcast to Cyril Tish Rollins and Pierre Fion later, hopefully to Fonson Bonneville at some point. We'll ask him the question. But it is these things that emerge, isn't it, when you're in a transition, any transition. We're always in some form of transition, but a transition to a different form of calendar, but also a different set of regulations, creates those kind of questions.
Yeah, especially with the Asian series being over the winter, you know, where traditionally you can manage that transition, can't you, between the end of October and beginning of April. You can manage that. But you know, technical regulations that fall over calendar years is always going to be a problem, and it'd be interesting one that goes right up to the top in WEC for the first season.
Absolutely. So one quick question about WEC to finish for the moment. First time for United Autosports with a full season commitment, 2019-20, one of the very first teams to commit. You know, and that token is beginning to grow. We're seeing other cars coming forward for LMP2. The Settler Racing guys coming as well. Tell us a little bit about the decision. Tell us a little bit about where that takes the team and that program. Will it stay at one car?
Yeah, it'll stay at one car because ELMS will stay at two. And we're trying to... We've had a pretty dramatic growth in the business. And as I mentioned, we're moving into a new building this year. It's quite a big season of upheaval and a lot of cars. So... you know, WEC, one car, what does it mean for the team? Well, you know, personally, I've always wanted to be able to go and try and fight for a world championship title. And, you know, it serves the ambition of the drivers as well. You know, it's a natural progression for Phil Hansen, who's going to make that step. And complementary to have Philippe Albuquerque that we've announced alongside him, who's got the experience in WEC as well. So we're just, timing's right. We're still ambitious, and a little team from Leeds going to fight for a world championship feels quite a nice story.
It does, and oddly enough, looking this year at the European Le Mans Series program, where you've got two cars from 18 car LMP2 field for overall wins and a European title, could you be in a position where it's easier to win a world title than a European one?
Well, you know, on paper you'd say so. With the grid size currently in WEC, you know, numerically, we had 15 cars in ELMS last year, and it's super tough and fantastic competition. And you know, when you've won a race, you've got you could definitely give yourself a pat on the back for that. Anybody who's finishing on the podium in that certainly deserves congratulations. So it's tough, and you know, six cars in WEC that I think has probably been the average this year, that you'd say so, but that would definitely be not giving credit to the likes of quality teams that are currently in it, Jota and the like. You know, I mean, those are teams that we've, you know, we've looked up to as we've gone into LMP2, that we definitely need to raise our game and get to that level. So I don't want to go in there and think that we're gonna beat them. But I do think if you can win in ELMS, there's a good chance you can win in WAC.
Before we get there, it'll be March the 1st. Good luck with that, Richard. Good luck this weekend. Still fighting for 3 titles as we record this. By the time you're listening to this on Inside the Sports Car Racing Paddock, we'll know whether Richard and the United World Sports team are going with into next week with 1 automatic entry, 2, 3, maybe none. This place has dealt up some amazing results in the past, but good luck for March the 1st.
Yeah, thank you. So it's a good race.
With the managing director of the Asian Le Mans Series, Cyril Teixeira-Allen. Cyril, it's the championship decider. It's a very big day for the teams here in the paddock with championships up for grabs, and of course Le Mans positions up for grabs, but it's a bigger weekend than that for you in the Asian Le Mans Series in what's been a real growth year, because we've just seen the calendar that has got some differences in a range of ways from last year. We stay with 4 top tracks with 4 four-hour races, but it oddly almost seems like it's more different than some of the changes. We've got, obviously we go back to Shanghai, but after that, a long gap before what I think everybody agrees is the most exciting change to the calendar, which is we go down under.
Hi, Graham. Yes, very exciting. After 4 years of running Asian Le Mans Series, we really needed to add some new flavor and give the calendar a bit of a change. As we already explained, the opportunity for Asian Le Mans to expand to Australia was fantastic, and this is something that has been very well received by the stakeholders. They are all very excited about the opportunity. You know, putting together a calendar, especially in the winter, is becoming quite a challenge, which is, an exciting challenge, because at the end of the day, you know that you must deliver. You have to find solutions. I think that we end up, at the end of the day, with a proposal which is fitting and ticking almost all the boxes. When it comes to avoid clashing with other major events, not clashing with Chinese New Year, starting late enough, I would say, after the end of ELMS, allowing European teams to get there in Shanghai, and not to finish later than what we do this weekend, which is already a bit tough for some of the European teams that must go back to Europe. But at the end of the day, Australia, the addition of that night race in Sepang, and the back-to-back option, it's something that looks pretty interesting. Yeah,
and we're hearing that. We're hearing that from the teams. For you know, the two things about the calendar, I think, that are attracted the most immediate response from. Let's face it, it's great that fans like where we're going, and it's great that the likes of me like where we're going, but the reality is I'm not the guy funding a car on the grid. And what we're hearing from those teams and those drivers is Australia, really exciting, really like the idea of that half day, half night race here at Sepang under the lights as the penultimate round. It does mean some choices have had to be made, and they're tough choices, but from what I understand of the way that this calendar has evolved, nothing's off the table for future years.
Absolutely not, and especially knowing that. And we have already told the teams that we were aiming at eventually moving from 4 to 5 events for the 2020-2021 season. That means that, for me, it's obvious that going back to Japan is on the list.
Which is good news for everybody that likes a really enthusiastic audience for endurance racing.
It's very important to go to Japan. Sometimes you have to make choices, and because of these constraints that we have to deal with when it comes to putting the calendar together, the challenge we were talking about previously. When you take into account the time it takes to ship a container, we do container racing, yep. You know, don't get me wrong, from venue A to venue B, you take into account the weather constraint that you have. You can't race in Far East Asia in January or February. So you know exactly what you can do and where are the tricks. You avoid Christmas, as we said, you have to adapt with the Chinese New Year date, which keeps changing every year back and forth by almost 10 days. And you try to make sure that the calendar and the window will fit with the Asian teams and European teams' expectations. And that's why having that back-to-back thing is something that is going to be a rehearsal and a nice experience with a view to moving for 4 to 5 events the year after in the same window.
Yeah. It's an interesting point here. I mean, you've been involved with major motorsport events and particularly major sports car motorsport events for much of your career. And I get the impression from conversations that we've had that actually finding the space for 4 events in this period of time is one of the toughest things you've done.
Actually, the calendar changed 3 times since, I would say, late November.
Yeah.
It's a happy ending, because at the end of the day, we managed to keep exactly the same window, manage to go to Australia, have that night race in Sepang, and finish in Buriram just a week after. Yeah, it's... We're quite happy.
Yeah.
Because it really gives us a pretty good timing and leverage to build an even bigger grid for the coming season. I really think so. Because, yes, it's a long way, but Australia is a real nice opportunity. It's attractive. The night race is attractive. The fact that having the last 2 rounds back-to-back will probably allow teams to save on some traveling costs as well. Because we do care about these kind of things, which are very, very important. We have open meetings with the team principals on a very regular basis. Almost at every round, we gather together and we talk and we discuss and we try to fine-tune. Everybody has his own agenda, which I fully appreciate. Teams have different business cases.
Mm-hmm.
Even amongst European teams or amongst the Asian teams, from GT or prototype. And what we must deliver and make sure of is that we frame it in the most effective way, and we find the right compromises to make sure that they are all happy.
Yeah. Well, that's tough.
It's not easy.
Yeah. It's, you know, we've got, you know, these are teams that are used to operating pretty much on the edge financially. And this is, for very many of them, particularly this season, it's a new adventure. And that was the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is we've seen one stage of evolution of the championship with a pretty hefty injection of real quality from Europe this season.
Yeah, true.
That's stage one. Stage two, though, is just as tough. That is about finding a quorum of teams and drivers from this region that will be the core that forms the basis of this championship that carries it forward.
Yeah, exactly. It's called Asian Le Mans Series. So it's meant, obviously, in the first place for Asian teams wanting to compete within the ACO racing environment. Here in Asia, we are on a mission, which is to grow LMP3, promote LMP cars in general, and bring those GT teams which like endurance racing. And we go to fantastic racetracks. We have a platform which is very attractive, to my opinion, when it comes to media exposure, sponsorship valuation, the quality of, scrutineering, race direction, having Eduardo Freitas, the Le Mans 24, WEC and EMS race director with us in Asia Le Mans since inception.
Yeah.
It's something which contributes towards the credibility and...
I guess the security of their investment as well. I mean, you're looking at something that's sustainable, I guess, from the point of view of people that you would want to come and invest in what's a very different sort of racing in Asia. This is not something that's had that tradition in Southeast Asia outside of Japan with sport prototype racing, and it feels like it's coming.
Yeah, and as for the sport, we're here for the long run. The ACO can't really afford not being on these big markets. Asian teams are very important, and we do endurance racing. This is what we do. We put prototype and GT cars on the same grid because this is what Le Mans is about. We try to really offer them the best possible platform for them to enjoy this kind of endurance racing. I think that in the near future, more and more Asian-based teams will come back in GT. And you will see there will be a slightly growth of Asian teams joining in LMP racing, in the fray of what Jackie Chan DC Racing and Eurasia are doing for many years now.
And you're in contact with all those teams, we know that. We've seen some of those guys here this weekend around the paddock again, as they often are. Is there a sense of frustration around how tough it is to attract those teams to lay down real roots in a new form of racing? That there are active teams in the region, but it seems to be a very tough task to persuade them to come and give this a try.
Again, I told you, they have different agendas, which I fully appreciate. The market is quite volatile. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming even more competitive every year because of all these new championships. Not only in GT, but even touring car. I mean, there are many, many championships that have been created in the last 2-3 years in Asia and China.
Yeah.
So it makes things even more difficult. So we know exactly what we want to do, what we want to achieve. We are quite unique in the sense of having LMP2 cars, LMP3 cars, and doing international endurance racing in Asia with LMP cars. So that's something which puts us in a unique situation. We are offering a different product. But it's very volatile. Remember, Graham, 2 years ago, we started the 2016-2017 season in Zhuhai with 29 cars on the grid. Mm-hmm. With 16 GT3 cars.
Yeah.
So it's a roller coaster, really. And you can't just see it and say, okay, it's been a great season, quality-wise, quantity-wise. It's going to be the same next year. No, not at all. So you can't give up fighting on a daily basis. It's hard work, yes, but that's my job. I mean, we must make sure that we keep pushing to build the series bigger and stronger. And I have to say that, honestly, this season has been really important because it's really a next step for us. It's been another step, a great step. And look at what's happening these days. You have European teams that have never competed in Asian Le Mans series before that have made announcements regarding their strong interest in joining the series for the 2019-2020 season. The like of Carlin, High Class Racing, wanting to join with the LMP2 2017 spec.
And that's another step, isn't it? That's another big step next year.
Fantastic.
Those cars are another level from what we've got here.
Definitely another level. Very important to keep going to fantastic racetracks. And these cars, this championship next season, will have the quickest car in the region.
Absolutely.
And that's the show is going to be amazing.
And that is something which presumably is pretty close to the top of your list of selling points to introduce new investors, new competitors, whether it's teams or drivers. This is the daddy. This is going to be the bend we're going to set, and we're going to set for a long time lap records there.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
You're smiling very broadly as you say. Now, you've been out there. I was going to ask you this. You've been out for a visit to Australia in just the last few days. Tell us a little bit about how that was received, not just by the good people at the Bend, but also by the media and indeed anybody from motorsport down under that you met there.
I'm impressed, and it's very much enjoyable because they love motorsport. They love, in Australia, they love sport. They love motorsports greatly, and they have welcomed the news in a way which is really impressive. Local newspapers are doing articles about Le Mans going to Australia. I mean, it will be the first time in 20 years that people will see LMP cars racing in Australia.
Fantastic.
It is fantastic. And the people and the reaction on social media has been really beyond what we expected in the first place, you know, because we are going there very humbly. We are going to learn from the experience of working with the people from the Bend together, and we are building a very fruitful and very good relationship, because both the Bend Motorsport Park and Asian Le Mans want to succeed in this event. It's very important for us, it's very important for them too. They really want to showcase the facility. And let me tell you just a quick story. Last week, I landed in Adelaide from Singapore. I go to the border officer, and he had to rescan my passport because my previous one was full. I had to redo a new passport. And he asked me to go to the next desk to have a lady rescanning my passport. She asked me the basic questions. Hello, sir. Good morning. What are you doing here? I mean, for business. What business are you in? Motorsports. And she asked me whether I'm here for Clipsal, you know, the supercar race in Adelaide Street Circuit. And I said, oh, no, unfortunately, I'm here for Asian Le Mans. Really great. My father was the flag marshal 20 years ago at the race of 1,000 years. And this is how my day started in Adelaide at 8:30 a.m. last week. They all love the sport.
It's an amazing thing. And, you know, you'll know we work together with a couple of people from Adelaide, both the Australians that are on the full-time staff at the Asia Le Mans Series, both come from Adelaide.
We have a very international Asia-Pacific team.
Absolutely, we do. And it just goes to show that, you know, when you've got a region that embraces the sport, as Adelaide did, that does lay down deep roots. And, you know, could it be that the Asia Le Mans Series is the next chapter in that? It's an exciting time.
Very exciting. But what's up with the time? We must first finish this weekend. There are lots of things at stake.
Yep.
With four Le Mans invites. It's probably, as you wrote last week in an article, probably the most important Asian Le Mans race ever for this reason. Yep. Because, of course, lots of teams are waiting for the Le Mans entry list to be released next week. So from a sporting point of view, it's a very, very important weekend. From Monday onwards, we are going to start working really hard on preparing next season, including dealing with all the questions that have been put on the table by some teams having to think about the better way to ship their car back after the end of the season to Europe, to especially the LMP3 teams, to make sure the cars are converted into the 2020 specs. So all these things have already been addressed. Yeah. We have had meetings already about this specific topic and many others. And, you know, we're in February, we start late November. We have 9 months to make sure that next year's season is even better and greater than the one we are just going to finish tomorrow at 5.
I can say thank you for now.
Thank you, Graham.
Cyril, it's been a fantastic Asian Le Mans season. We sit at the moment in the press conference room at Sepang just, half a day before we finish the season tomorrow. You're right, I don't think there's ever been a race in the Asian Le Mans Series, it's been as eagerly anticipated by the people here, and for that matter, as eagerly watched by the whole endurance racing community as they wait to find out what's going to happen with the final 18 places for the 2019 Le Mans 24 Hours. You've stolen my closing line, because I was about to say the really hard work starts on Monday. You're smiling as you say it. It's going to be a bit of a ride, but we should, all things being equal, be back with you from the Asian Le Mans Series at Shanghai in November this year.
Yeah.
And let's hope with a very high quality grid indeed. For now, Cyril Teixeira, and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Graham.
With Guy Cosmo, Patrick Byrne from United Autosports. Guys, year two in the Asia Le Mans Series. We're back at Sepang for the season finale. You came here as champions with dramatic finish to last season in LMP3. Back in an LMP2 car. Patrick, how's that been?
Yeah, it's been great. The car is awesome. It makes you rethink everything you've driven and why you haven't been in a P2 car. It's fantastic.
So, Guy, you're tasked with kind of helping Patrick's career through. I guess the question to both of you is, why are two guys from the US here with such a massive, scalable set of program potentials in the US? Why are you here in Asia and doing the Asia Le Mans Series?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things, a balance between the program that Patrick and I have been on as far as what started out as a coaching program for Patrick and then turned into a racing program. And and then a teammate kind of program. So, you know, our relationship evolved from coach to pro teammate. And now we're taking his classroom and putting it into a real pro racing environment. And what better way to do it than in an ACO FIA series, you know, with top-level competition. So that was one aspect of it, is anything we were looking at, we need to race together. You know, he doesn't want me in a headset and on the radio to try to help him improve. He wants me driving the same car the same day, the same sessions, and the feedback and the data, and then also the results that we can achieve together. And it's been a great formula. You know, we did a lot of one-off races over the past couple of years. We decided to come after a championship, and we were successful in winning that championship, and now we're moving up. So with Asia, you know, Patrick and his father are extremely respectful of my existing commitments in the sport and, you know, understand that the things I have lined up, I'd like to continue to do until we are at a point where we can go racing together on a bigger scale. And this falls perfectly in place with the calendar.
It's that neat timing of the calendar.
It really is. You know, it allows me to race my full season and for Patrick to do a lot of the things he's doing in vintage racing and other forms of racing. And then we have the winter and the off season to be able to come and do some more racing.
We've seen throughout sports car racing in particular the last few years, the pro-am aspect, maybe not entirely respected around the around the world. Some of the kind of teams we see emerging in IMSA, some of the teams we see emerging across Europe, you know, Super Silver, and for that matter, Super Bronze, are becoming very much a thing. It doesn't seem like that here. And, you know, you guys have come with a pairing that has absolutely respected what the, not just the letter, but the spirit of the regulations actually say, and you've had success, Patrick.
Yeah. You're right, though. There are combinations, and they've been, you know, there's some very steep competition that fall under those regulations. And I guess the interesting part about Asia is it's over 2 years, and so some people are re-ranked in between because it covers the next year. And but in Asia, they get to keep the original ranking.
Hey.
So you play with that, but you're right. There are many cars booked here that have the correct ranking. They have the correct driver lineup, and yeah, you can respect those and still be competitive for sure. But it is all still about your driver lineup. I mean, if you have a great team and you're really slow out there, you're not going to do very well.
Yeah.
And if you're really fast and you can give good feedback to your team, you're going to do fantastic.
And we've seen, without a shadow of a doubt, over the two seasons with this combination, we've seen that speed and that consistency coming from you because there's been plenty of time out there in those cars.
Right, yeah. Yeah, we're working really hard at it. Guy's a great coach. I mean, we sit down for data all day long, as much as we can. We look at video. We're constantly meeting with all of our crew chiefs and our engineers and team managers. And I mean, you have to work at it here. It's not just show up, race, and go home. And if you do that, you're not going to be successful.
But it does seem to me, and Guy, you know, you've been a part of, I think, one of the most fantastic packages. The IMSA package is stacked, but they're pretty frenetic weekends. There's a lot going on those weekends. It does seem to suck out a lot of the available time to do some of that good stuff that Patrick's been
talking about there.
Well, exactly. And, you know, how do you take a driver and help groom them to compete at the top levels of the sport without diving in with the huge budgets and the massive levels of competition that we see in IMSA, that we see in WEC, that we see in the European Le Mans Series? Yep. And trust me, I'm not trying to say that Asia is any less competitive. Obviously, there are smaller car counts, right? You know, we're mm-hmm. looking at 6 to 12, you know, cars per class. But it's still very competitive. And it's the exact same format that we would be racing if we were to go and race in the European Le Mans Series.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other aspect of it is that it's four races. So I couldn't take him and say, listen, in order to learn at this level and to compete at this level, you know, we've got to go and find a $1-point-something million budget to go race a P2 car. It's not feasible for us right now. It's not an option. We don't have the sponsorship. We don't have the funding to be able to go do it. But we can race four races, and it just happens to be a full championship here in Asia. So now he's got that experience at a fraction of the cost, in essence, to compete a championship from start to finish because it's only four races. That's one of the biggest draws, and it's one of the reasons why we were able to graduate as quickly as we did from LMP3 to LMP2, because if we wanted to race a P2 car anywhere else in the world, it was going to cost a lot more than this.
Because we've got this year and next year for the LMP2 and guys to be still in the older cars.
Right.
With the Gibson cars coming, and with that comes a big gob of extra performance, but also a substantial commitment financially as well.
Yes.
We're coming to the end now of the second season. Eight races in Asia between the two of you with those successes. You've had a chance now to see what's actually, in very many ways, a very different calendar next year. The end of season is squeezed a little for some very good reasons. We're going to see a race into the night here at Sepang. We're going to see a race that I know a lot of people are hotly anticipating at the Bend down in Australia, but that's going to be swelteringly hot. Tell us what you think about the calendar, and you know, if you've had that conversation yet, prospects we might see you two guys again.
Yeah, the calendar changes the calendar. First of all, the Malaysia night race, fantastic. They released it while we were doing the track walk underneath the lights. They did the track walk at night, and we were all thinking it, and it came out. We all read the email while we were out there, and that's exactly what we wanted. So it's so hot here. A night race is great. Australia is going to be extremely hot. It's just a few weeks after Christmas, which in that equator is middle of summer. They've got rid of Fuji, which is great in a lot of ways. It was so cold there. The people are fantastic. The fans are great. It's such a cool circuit, but it is freezing cold. You lose feeling in your feet and fingertips. So in the end, the calendar's great. For drivers, it is difficult to do, especially for us living so far away, two weekends close together.
Yep.
Especially because they can never be back-to-back because of the shipping, so there has to be a week in between. So financially, how do we go home in between those? It's unachievable. So we have to stay here. And you're looking at hotels, restaurants, away from your family. It's just a number of things that makes it difficult to be on the road for three, four weeks. And so, you know, us drivers, we hate to see that. Now, the teams at the same time, in order to ship things, I guess it makes it a little bit more feasible. But still, they have all their crew guys here. They have to put them up in hotels for 3 weeks rather than send them all home, because it's cheaper to put them in a hotel than it is to send them home. And so we see that with the last two races. I think they're close enough together.
They're a week apart. So yeah. It's a road trip for the teams, or for the kit. We'll be on the back of a truck 3 days to Buran.
Right.
And it can only be done that order, I'm told, and I think we'll hear from Cyril Teixeira later in the show, because of the way the customs process works.
Yep,
you can do it that way, but not the other way. So they are literally on consecutive weekends.
Right. Which is going to make for not only two very hot weekends, but also it's going to be difficult to stay kind of in this area between Malaysia and Buriram. You're going to have a lot of Bali trips and a lot of trips around the world, but they're all going to be hot and right around the same area. That's kind of my input. But it's a great calendar. Bend looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Shanghai was a great addition this year. The track is very fun. It's still cold, but it's warmer than Fuji. And so it's just kind of, it's kind of the best. They're refining it every single year that we've been in it. and it's getting better and better and better. And hopefully it'll be to the point that it's one of the top series that people will want to go to because of the destinations and because of the tracks.
Prospects of seeing you guys back? Is that going to be something you've got to go away and think about because of that calendar?
I think Asia's, you know, is always going to be an option for us. We love it here. It's kind of, you know, we've had success. It's fun to do it. It's the off season, so it fits very well in our calendar. It all comes down to what's available, what cars we can find, what teams, you know, a lot of pencil shaving and a lot of phone conversations between us going to every single commitment that we make. And Asia's probably always going to be on that table for sure.
Yeah.
And what time out, like, let's talk about a Le Mans entry.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where else can you go where if you have success, you can come away with an automatic entry to the 24 Hours of Le Mans?
Yeah, absolutely right. Within a reasonable scope of teams. I mean, you know, we are going to be at the end of this race meeting with four additional entries from the 18 that are still on the table.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's ever been a time when the Asia Le Mans series will have been as important to the endurance racing world as it is this weekend.
Exactly.
There are so many people for so many reasons looking at whether or not you guys or somebody else picks up the trophy at the end of this weekend.
Right.
Yeah. You're clearly pretty far up in the queue. What would that mean?
It would be amazing. You know, it was our dream last year to come here for the first time, learn these tracks, figure out the travel, you know, survive acclimating to the series and try to do well, and then we come away with the championship. I mean, down to the last lap of the final race.
Amazing.
You know, by just the slimmest margin, and whammo, like, there's our Le Mans entry. Okay, problem is, how do you fund it? So, you know, like, we're taking steps here, and the first step was, let's compete at this level, and let's do what we can to find the budget and put it together and work with the teams and negotiate and, you know, get ourselves here. And it wasn't easy to do, and we were very lucky to have all the support that we did. And, you know, and then we had that miraculous opportunity. We had first right of refusal to be the drivers for that entry, and we just couldn't make it happen. That was probably one of the saddest days of my life when I first saw the at the Le Mans test, three drivers driving our car, and it wasn't us.
Because I think, you know, I mean, for our audience, it's worth actually saying to both of you and asking both of you here is, we talk about auto entries and it sounds really simple, but actually that's the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, that isn't free.
No.
That is a huge kind of commitment. I mean, you know, give an idea of the level of commitment for an LMP2 car for a private entry to come to Le Mans. What kind of money are we talking for that to happen?
It's basically $1 million to run a P2 car at Le Mans. It's one race.
Yep.
I mean, granted, it includes the test. So
yep.
If you're looking at total number of days in a race car, but that's the average going budget, you know, 800 something thousand euro, 900, you know, $1 million US, call it whatever you want to call it. And that's a lot of money. And I've been racing a really long time, and I've been fortunate enough to be hired, you know.
Yep, to do some really big races.
Career.
Yep, yep.
I probably would have done many things differently if I had secured the funding myself.
Yep.
I could have raced different cars, different teams, different series, right? But I've never been good at finding sponsorship and support. And that's one of our main focuses. Patrick and I and his family and, you know, all of my brain power and connections, and we're doing what we can to try to build up our program as a driving combination, right? We don't have a team name. We don't have a club name. You know, we're two guys trying to figure out how to do more racing together. And that's going to take support from outside sources because we just can't do it. So we're working on that.
Some long thinking to do. Some scraping behind the couch to do, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Let's hope you actually do earn that opportunity, because it would be a delight to see two champions from the Asia Le Mans season back here next year and also at the Le Mans 24 Hours. That's what it's about, gentlemen. Thanks for talking to us.
Andrea, thank you.
And here with Catherine Legg, a very welcome addition, Catherine, to the Asia Le Mans series, albeit just for the one round with the number 50 LMP3 car.
It would be wrong to say that this is now an unusual effort, and it's certainly not unusual for you, because we've got an all-female crew here, and actually a pretty big name all-female crew, and you're heading it. Things are changing with the Women in Motorsport initiatives coming out of the FIA, and you seem to be very much in the core of that.
Yeah, well, thank you, firstly, Graham. But yeah, it does feel like things are changing, doesn't it? I'm glad people are noticing that from the outside. And it seems to be really a last kind of 6 or 8 month thing, probably in reality a year. And there's been a lot of people over the past few years that have been working towards it. So you've got the FIA, Women in Motorsport Commission. They've been headlining the charge, if you like. For example, they got the all-female test to happen with Formula E. But it's something that's very close to my heart, getting more women involved in racing. Totally, you know, whether it's in driving or in engineering or mechanics or whatever it may be, I want to see it as a more inclusive sport. And it isn't unusual, you know, there's been a few of us, for example, with the program we've got going in the States, in the IMSA series, you know, we've tried to put together the best drivers that we can to showcase it. But we've all been successful independently of each other. What we're just trying to do is make a bigger splash by putting it all together. And obviously, we have a fantastic sponsor in Caterpillar, yep, a fantastic partner in Acura, and MSR, one of the best teams in the world, and I'm really proud to be driving for them again. So anything that we can do that's being taken seriously, I think, is a positive. What we don't want to do is be seen as a gimmick in any way, shape, or form, or we're just doing it for the marketing. You know, they've got a new initiative with the ELMS now, also
with Michelle
yep, driving with here. Again, three excellent drivers that kind of, you know, in the past they've for sure done the all-female thing, but now we're doing it properly, and I think people are starting to take some notice.
And that's a great thing. You're right, it does seem to have come all but a rush, and maybe that's because suddenly there's maybe some strategy about it, a little bit of guidance from the centre of the sport, maybe?
Honestly, I would like to say yes. And for sure, yes, the FIA have helped enormously, but without Michelle Mouton and Kathy Muller heading it up and pushing it along, we wouldn't have had the opportunities that we have, and we wouldn't have the people like Richard Mille that are involved in this. But in all reality, it's been a little bit of a coincidence as well. So, you know, our program in the States came about by Jackie Heinricher and deciding that she wanted to put an all-female team together, finding me, and then we strategized, and obviously Mike's now heading up the effort with Jackie, you know, and trying to make that as successful as possible. And who knows where that goes in the future as well, because we've got big plans for that. We want to go prototype racing. We want to test and have a shootout with other girls. You know, Jackie she's a scientist and a businesswoman by trade, and she has these grand plans. And so I'm really proud to be a part of that. And this and everything else that I'm doing, because there's so few of us.
but you know, we sit here now in Sepang, in Malaysia. In about a week's time, we will find out whether or not there's going to be another step on that road. And we wish you luck with that. Thank for those that are listening to this that don't know, there is an entry in from Michael Shank Racing for the Le Mans 24 Hours with an LMP2 car with, again, an all-female crew.
Yeah.
And again, that's changing minds. And it's changing minds principally because you guys are performing, and we've already seen that with the Acura effort in the States, and that's got to be a massive boost.
No, it is. And 2.5 years ago now, I came into GT racing with Mike, and it was interesting to get used to it. I think I have one of the most diverse careers in motorsport, having driven the Formula E and
you know, and the
GT open wheel, let's see the Jaguar program.
Hang on a minute, not just driven, you're winning, come on.
Thank you, yeah. And that's another program that's been pro-women. And I honestly think the key has been surrounding yourself with the right people.
Yep.
So I'm with MSR in the States, and with Rahal's team and Jaguar and in the Formula E. You know, they believe in me,
yep,
and they listen to me and they support me, and we formed this bond and this team, and so I can go out there and do my job and win. I'm not a girl driver to them.
Yep.
I'm their race car driver who, yep, they put everything behind. And so that's been important. You know, I've spent a lot of years driving some really dodgy stuff. I've had good car at Indy, I've had a bad car at Indy, I've had, you know, I drove a Delta Wing, and Dr. Panos was another one who believed in me. But how can you judge how good somebody is when you're driving a one-off prototype like that? It's really hard. So I think nobody really knew what I was capable of since the Atlantic days when I was also winning, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think I've gained experience. I've toughened up a lot.
I was going to get into that in a moment because for me, look, you are seen as being very much in that top rank at IMSA, without a shadow of a doubt. But part of that is not just your speed. It's the fact you're not intimidated out there. And there's one particular race, and I'm sure you remember this, where there was a degree of intimidation going on. And Catherine Legg, you proved yourself to be a bit of a badass there.
Thank you.
You weren't going to be bullied off that track.
Oh, right, yeah, no, I know what you're referring to. No, I wasn't, especially not by some jumpy little kid. No, anyway.
But that's important, isn't it?
It is
important. It's important that actually, because the message is very simple. The message is, we're here to compete on level terms. And the question I was coming to was this. You do stand there at the moment at the top of that rank of lady drivers in top line motorsport. Tell me a little bit about what kind of traffic you get, whether or not it's through social media, whether or not it's through people that are contacting you at a racetrack. What effect is that having in terms of people coming forward and seeing the role model that is Catherine Legg?
Quite a lot. I would say it's not as much as when I first started out, you know, when I was doing Atlantics, and it was basically globally there was me and Danica, right?
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
Then Simona and Anna came along, and I still believe they're two of the best female drivers in the world also. But back in the day, it was more of a gimmick and a novelty. Now it's less so, for sure, amongst my peers as well. And that's a case of respect, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
I think I've earned the respect of the guys that I drive against for the most part. And it's the same with the new guys coming in. They have to earn our respect. So I feel like I found a happy place in my racing life. But from the periphery, I think that's where they start to think that it's different or it's unusual, because I think, as I just said, I'm just a racing driver to the team, to the other drivers. They don't really, the car doesn't know the difference. Nobody sees it as any different. But then to the outside world, you know, not even to the motorsports press anymore, but to the outside press and to the fans and to some other people, it's cool and it's different because they haven't seen it before.
Yeah.
And there haven't really been women winning in top levels to reinforce the fact that they can do it. You know, the last time really women won on a global stage was Michelle Mouton when she was doing the rally. So there's been no female Formula One champions. It's been tough, honestly, for us to get the good equipment, the good cars and everything else to go out and showcase that. And I've come across that. I've been lucky in my career, and I'm probably sat here right now because I am a woman, if I'm honest. You know, would I have got the shots if I was Joe, whatever his name is, you know? Who knows? But I've worked really hard as well. And I think making the most of those opportunities is key. And I think that, you know, it goes for you and it goes against you.
But as more women come into this, that's going to get tougher. You're there doing what you do, and I'll give the counterpoint, because you're one of the best of what you do in that subset, because these are initiatives that are designed to carry it forward. Talking a little bit about Asia, it's the first time here for you doing this, and I don't want to get too much into the program, but what kind of prospects do you think there are? You've seen what's happened with IMSA in the European Le Mans Series, Michelle and the girls there in the Asia Le Mans Series, with a brand new marketplace for endurance racing. How big a pool do you think we could be looking at in the future here?
I think there are so many initiatives starting at grassroots level. You know, you've got Susie's one with Dare to be Different. You've got the FIA Women in Motorsport Commission. You've got other little ones popping up over the place that I think it's opening doors,
yeah,
for sure. There's still a numbers game in my mind. You know, I know how tough it was and how I dedicated my life to it since I was 9 years old. And I don't know whether that's stubborn or stupid.
Let's go for stubborn.
Let's go with stubborn. But it takes a hell of a lot of tenacity to keep digging and keep pushing and do all that. And, you know, when you're young, you've got so many options ahead of you that maybe it's not the easiest road for sure. So if we can get more to stick it out, I
yep.
think that's the key, because there are some in karting that are really showing some promise. We just need to give them the support. I'm kind of, I have two mindsets of that. Like, I want to support them, but I also want them to toughen up, you know? Yeah. It's not easy. If you're going to make it, you don't get given it on a silver platter. Just because you're a girl or because you are a certain nationality or anything like that, it just doesn't happen. And if you do, you're not hungry enough for it.
Well, there you go. And actually, this is where we are going to get into a new era with this one, because if this is a success, it actually gets tougher. It gets tougher because it's increasingly going to be performance-led.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you make a very good point. And as well, it should be.
Yep.
You know, I think you should always be racing against the best. You should always push yourself. I'm still pushing myself now. I've been really lucky to have some really good teammates. And, you know, you put yourself up against Alvaro Perrin and Andy Lally and those guys, and if you're not performing, I wouldn't still be here. Mike would have fired my butt ages ago. So, yes, you make a very good point, and they do need to perform. And I think there are a few coming up now that are performing. There are still a few that are there because they like doing the glamour selfies, which annoys me enormously.
Fine, yeah.
But whatever floats your boat. I mean, I think there's room for everybody, honestly.
I guess the final question is this, and it's a question that's been very live, you'll be aware of it, around the role of women in motorsport and the way in which people are trying to build that presence. And there are two very different models that are being applied. There's the model here, where we've got an all-female crew in an otherwise, let's face it, male-dominated paddock. Then you've got the other side, which is females competing only against females. Now, where are you on that personally?
With the W Series, yeah.
W Series is a great example, the best example of it.
It is, and I'm honestly torn, because if I had no money and I was hungry to make it in racing, would I do it? Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, I would. Do I think that it's the right way to go? Not necessarily. I think maybe it can bring a certain amount of attention to what they're doing and give them the experience that they need in a way, but it has to be done right, and so far I'm not sure that it's going to be done right, in which case it will be detrimental. So I honestly don't know where I stand.
They've got to prove it, haven't they?
They've got to prove
its worth, and they've got to prove that this is actually leading to somewhere better than we've been before.
Yeah, and honestly, it'll be so easy for it to go down the wrong path. You know, some of them have a fight or whatever, and the media pick up on it. It will just be detrimental to all the hard work that we've done to be taken seriously. But as I said, you can't blame the girls for wanting to do it. There's a big prize fund. They get free experience. But they're not racing against the best. I think you're going to see a huge disparity. I don't think the way they've been selected has been the way I would have gone about it. I think doing it in road cars and stuff like that is probably a little bit arbitrary. But yeah, it could go either way. I really, really hope that it goes the right way, because I think it could then, you know, give a springboard for some of them to have an opportunity in real life motorsports, if you like. And I hope it's not seen as a joke and a gimmick. But I worry about it, honestly.
Thanks for that. For this weekend, good luck. Very warm out there.
Yes.
You've got 420 brake horsepower greenhouse for the 4 hours around Sepang.
I'm used to it.
But the effort looks great. It's going to be a step forward. You've got a smile on your face. It's been all weekend. It's been great to see you kicking ass in the garage as well.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
With Anders Fjord back in the Argyle Pro Racing team this weekend at Sepang. But Anders, overnight, a great announcement. First team to commit for the 2019-2020 season are your team, High Class Racing. We're a very familiar team from the European Le Mans Series, but stepping up to the Asian Le Mans Series next year and committing your pair of Dallara P217 Gibsons, first year, of course, of the new Gibson engine cars. Tell us a little bit about the programme.
Well, it's all early days, but we are really happy to be here, first of all, this season. And we are so happy that we decided to go with a double LMP2 entry for the next season. So we're really looking forward to it.
Now, you've been here in the Asian Le Mans paddock and doing great guns with the LMP2 AM class. Tell me a little bit about your impressions of the package here. What, you know, when you do get the interest in those two cars to come next season, what will you be telling potential customers for the team about the attraction of this series?
Well, it's a perfect way to get into LMP2. It's a bit cheaper than running in the European Championship, and as well, it's over the winter, so it's perfect to extend your season or escape a winter break. So it's perfect locations and the weather is great, and I think it's a really good way to start up the season.
And might we see yourself and your long-time driving partner Dennis aboard one of those cars, or is that yet to be decided?
It's yet to be decided. We have a lot of fun on our program. So first of all, we need to commit as a team, and after that we can work on the drivers, and we have a lot of interested young drivers and experienced drivers. So we saw there's a lot of interest, so we need to commit, and when we're committed we'll do, because otherwise it will just be a lot of talking and no action.
We've now seen the calendar. It's Shanghai, back here at Sepang into the night, for 2 hours at night in fact at Sepang, following week at Buriram. But I guess the big draw for an awful lot of people is the additional track that joins the Asian Le Mans series next season, replacing Fuji on the calendar, the Bend in South Australia.
Yeah, it's, I think it's we also liked to go to Fuji as it's one of the WEC races, so it's also a good way to learn the WEC calendar. And but obviously after learning about the Bend, it looks extraordinary.
And you're looking forward to being back here in some way, shape or form, whether with...
Yeah, I'm really happy to be able to go here next year, wherever, what team I'm in, but I'll be really happy.
So you're going to have the extraordinary position, potentially, where we might actually see Anders Fjordback having driven three completely different LMP2 cars in a single year.
Yeah.
With the Dallara, we've seen you in the LMS.
Yeah.
Team are stepping up in Europe to the Orica 07, of course, here. What, the penultimate year, we believe, of the older spec cars. Mm. You got a favourite?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah. We see maybe after Europe this year with the Oricas.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll see.
Great stuff. Great news then from High Class Racing, actually bringing the first two Gibson Engine P2 cars to commit to the Asian Le Mans series. We'll hopefully see you at Shanghai at the end of the year.
We sure will.
And that was our Asian Le Mans Series special edition of Inside the Sports Car Paddock. Thank you again to Graham for making all of these interviews happen. And we will be back to you next week with a standard edition of Inside the Sports Car Paddock, featuring interviews with some of our favorite folks. Also, kicking off, as usual, with our great technical series with Jeff Brown, dear old friend, someone I've known for decades, getting into the finer engineering, rules, strategy, electronics, you name it, side of sports car racing that we both love so much. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented to you by Cooper Tires and the Justice Brothers. Thank you for listening.